are operating. So now we can start with our meeting. And hopefully tonight, members will be able to sleep early. Yesterday, they worked until early hours of the morning at 2 a.m. to be precise. So at least today with MDB, we know that we don't have a lot of issues, although there are issues that will be raised as we are moving towards the local government elections. So at least they will be able to sleep early if we get all the necessary responses that we are expecting from the entity. Colleagues, the chair is also apologized as indicated by Meshevin. She was going to be late for the meeting due to the commitment that she has. She thought by this time she would have been done, but unfortunately, she's going to be late for the meeting. She will join us later. So we can now start with our meeting. Today's meeting kickstarts the process of considering the annual performance plan, strategic plan, and budget of the departments and entities reporting to the portfolio committee. This is a forward-looking process where the focus is on allocation of resources to the departments and entities in respect of the financial year starting on the 1st April 2021 and ending on the 31st March 2022. This will culminate in the adoption of the committee's budget vote report, which is provisionally scheduled for debate in the National Assembly on Thursday, the 13th May 2021. The budget vote process is different from the annual reporting process, which is backward-looking and focuses on accountability for the use of resources allocated in the prior year. First in the line in this year's budget vote process is consideration of the annual performance plan, strategic plan, and budget of the Municipal Demarcation Board in respect of the financial year starting on the 1st April 2021 and ending on the 31st March 2022. On pursual of the APP, the overall impression is that the board is committed to ensuring that the demarcation of the municipal boundaries results in the creation of sustainable municipalities that can fulfill their constitutional obligations. The commitment, however, is still far from being a reality. Between the 13th of November and the 4th of December 2020, this committee convened meetings with municipalities that have been subjected to demarcation during the 2016 local government electoral cycle. This is after we became aware of the serious municipal financial management problems that were directly related to the amalgamation process. We have municipalities such as Mangau. We have the other one in Western Cape, whereby this amalgamation is really not assisting that much. The overwhelming majority of the municipalities that honored the invitation to brief the committee were of view that amalgamation process worsened rather than improved the financial viability of those municipalities. In last week's presentation to this committee, you indicated that some of these municipalities are demanding a reversal of the amalgamation that took effect in 2016. All the suggestions that we're still far from realizing the commitment to demarcate boundaries that create sustainable municipalities able to meet their constitutional obligation in terms of Section 152. On previous engagements, committee members have also highlighted the need for the board to improve on its public awareness and stakeholder education process. In the APP, the board also commit to address this matter. We welcome this commitment, but will not stop there. We have a duty to ensure that these commitments are motivated on a regular basis so that they do not become empty promises. From time to time, we'll be calling the board to check on progress and to request the latest update on this matter. However, we also understand that the board is also having some financial challenges in terms of implementing its mandate, and the COVID-19 did not make it easier for the board. So far, the board has registered encouraging achievement, including obtained clean audits for the last two consecutive financial years. And as the committee, we usually don't praise the fish for swimming. But in the current status that we find ourselves, if we have entity or department that gets clean audit, it also gives us hope as the committee, because it's something that is also a challenge in most of our municipalities. As well as improving, we also acknowledge the one of the achievements of the committee, as well as improving organizational performance from 59% in 2015-2016 to 95% in 2019-2020. You also managed to finalize the ward delimitation process in time for 2021 local government election, despite the challenges of COVID-19 working environment. We reiterate our commitment to support the board with constructive inputs to ensure that these gains are sustainable. So now, colleagues, I'm going to go to the item number 2 in our agenda, whereby I will allow the Municipal Demarcation Board under the leadership of Ndate Manyoni to present their report to us. And as we went through the report, we saw that it's such a huge document. So we'll request that they speak to the report instead of going to the report page by page, and we'll therefore give them at least 20 minutes to complete the report. Ndate Manyoni, over to you and your team.
Thank you, my chairperson, members of the committee, Mem Khalid.
Yes.
Chairperson, may the record and members present. Chairperson, you already have summarized. I thought you'll say closure. But nonetheless, let me also quickly highlight a few matters. Yes, Chairperson, we have also the Deputy Chairperson with us here and our senior managers in case there's a need to explain on matters on the three issues that we are here about, the APPs, strategic plan, and our budget performance. Yes, Chairperson, we have tried to attain so-called clean audit, and we have, as we promised earlier, that we will work as if elections are tomorrow, Chairperson. We have concluded what delimitations in the country, and we already are receiving and doing some homework on matters of outer boundaries, as you also indicated. And we also are doing a small research on the issue of amalgamations and exactly where the problems are lying when it comes to matters of amalgamations, because yes, most municipalities, actually almost all municipalities that have been amalgamated are faced with serious problems. And also, Chairperson, of course, we have committed that moving forward, since that time, the first time when we reported to the committee, we will strengthen public and stakeholder awareness and engagement so that South Africans can understand what this demarcation board is all about. I must indicate, Chairperson, that even if we are doing that, we need to balance between what is legislated and what our wishes would be in terms of trying to deepen democracy. Because sometimes some of the activities, the more we intensify on them, the more we have then to add more financial resources. And usually National Treasury will just indicate to us that as long as an issue is not part of what is legislated, they would not necessarily assist in funding such a program or an activity. You know by now, Chairperson and members, that we are still going back to communities where there is dissatisfaction one way or another, and to try to address some of the concerns that are being raised post the delimitation processes. Though we have already handed over all the maps to the IEC so that the IEC can also start with its preparations for smooth local government elections. Chairperson, the main thing that I would like to also highlight as part of my concluding remarks is the issue of decentralization of our activities. I know this has now become a normal song, but basically we are trying to stress the point so that members, as they engage with other bodies and looking into matters of finances, given the financial constraints that the country is faced with at the moment because of COVID-19 issues, we still should not lose sight that ultimately our aim is to make sure that we will and we should have provincial offices. In other words, to regionalize, decentralize our activities. Of course, that is part of ensuring that at least we are deepening democracy. Communities can have easy access to the demarcation board, simply because it is one of the stakeholders, that is the board, that has an impact on their livelihoods, particularly at local government elections. With those remarks, Chairperson, if you allow, I will hand over to our CEO to quickly go through the three areas that we are here about in summary form for members. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson of the board and Chairperson of Honorable Chair of the Committee and all Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues from COCTA and the other institutions. Can I check if I'm sharing. Are you able to see the presentation?
Yes, okay. Yes, we can.
Yeah, I'll be able to summarize in 20 minutes that we have been given. The outline is there, and I won't want to go through the outline. The purpose is just for us to really present on what the chair has indicated, the broader issues of the strategic plan for the 2020-2025, the APP and the budget allocation and some of the challenges that the institution encounter. I won't touch that because the chair has done that. With regard to the governance arrangement of the board, we have the board that is led by the chairperson, and we've got those six committees, the finance one being the newly established committee. Those others I've already shared with the committee some time, the governance, human capital, audit and risk, the ward delimitation and boundary determination committee, previously it was the boundary powers and functions subcommittee, and then research and knowledge management. At administrative level, we have got four programs. We have got administration, we have got demarcation, research, and stakeholder management. In terms of the broader mandate, we derive it from the Constitution, Section 155, 1553B and 1574 of the Constitution of the country. Our mandate, I always say that our mandate when we share with the committee is like sharing John 3:16 in the Bible, is the determination of the outer boundaries and all the sections that are in the Demarcation Act and the Structures Act gives us that mandate. The delimitation of municipal boundaries, which is Schedule 1 of the Structures Act, and we do assessment of municipal capacity, where we assess whether this municipality has the capacity to provide the services, and then we render advisory services. Chair, I won't go through this slide as you have already touched on all those matters that are there, save to deal with number three and number four. Number three on the issue of spatial boundary descriptions is a project where we are defining the boundary of a municipality so much so that when we do an outer boundary determination, we shouldn't find ourselves to be very far from in terms of the distance must be very, very small. And the next one on the norms and standards for municipal capacity to perform their powers and functions, we have decided to do the norms and standards for all the 38 functions that are in Schedule 4B and 5B. And the main reason why we decided to do this was for us to be able to articulate that this municipality does not necessarily have the capacity between the B and the C. And we are able to advise the MEC accordingly to say the function needs to be adjusted either to the district or to the local. In terms of the strategic plan, our vision, I'm happy the chair of the committee, the acting chair of the committee, articulated our vision. And this is the vision that we intend to achieve in the next 5 years. And our mission is, of course, to create the special conditions for sustainable development and transformation for local communities through municipal and ward boundaries demarcation, and also provide the advice. It encompasses the totality of our mandate. In terms of values and principles, we've got those five, impartiality, transparency, excellence, inclusivity, and integrity. And we are showing in the manner in which we act that we are indeed impartial, but we are also transparent in the activities that we do. In terms of the broader strategic direction that the whole strategic plan is facing, we put an impact statement that will assist us to say to ourselves at the end of the 5 years, have we been able to develop a democratic, partially integrated and socio-economically sustainable community? If not, we'll then be able to say our strategic plan did not really impact on the manner that we wanted to. Now, within the broader medium-term strategic framework, we have those seven priorities. As the MDB, we said we will whatever we do will be aligning to priority number four, which is your spatial integration, human settlement, and local government. And then out of the this, we then came up with four broad outcomes and some outcome indicators. Now, the first outcome was the organizational excellence. And for us to measure whether the organization will be excelling, we introduced in the next 5 years the maturity level. And we were saying in the 5 years, we should have achieved a maturity level of five. The second outcome is a well-defined municipal spaces. And this, we say the indicator will be when we deal with issues of ward delimitations and the municipal boundary determinations. And those are the five-year targets. And the third outcome is the improved access to research and spatial information. The indicator there is for us to have research and spatial information accessible. And then the last outcome is improved public and stakeholder participation. Chairperson, you noted that this was one of the biggest challenges. It continues to be one of the biggest challenges because the kind of footprint that we have in the country as the MDB, we are unable to touch each and every soul. Even the kind of interventions that we are putting together in terms of social media, you still find those who are not really having the access of those. Now, in relation to the annual performance plan, we have those four programs. I'm sorry, I think we have a misprint there where it says program three on the stakeholder engagement is program four. And those, sorry, I passed, those four programs, if you look at the first one, program one, that's where we have the broader issue of the broader outcome of organizational excellence. And we have got 12 outputs and indicators to serve that. And that constitutes 55% of our APP. In terms of well-defined municipal spaces, we have got three outputs and improved access to research, four, and improved public and stakeholder participation, we have got three, and in total, we have 22. The next slide is just an expansion of what constitute the output and the output indicator for the first outcome of if I remind you of organizational excellence. Now we have the purpose of that particular program as to ensure adequate and sustainable resources, capabilities and core competencies to aid the achievement of the MDB mandate. This is where we have all our soft our human resources and soft issues and issues of support to the work of the board. The first output and output indicator is the implementation of the rate of board resolutions, the committees and board performance evaluated, and then reports on compliance with relevant legislation. And then next we have organizational performance review sessions. This chairperson, as you have indicated, that one of the factors that assisted us to turn around the entity in terms of performance was to insist on the review and identify gaps that are there and be able to intervene while there's time for us to be able to intervene. We have the ICT governance reports that are part of the broader governance, ICT governance in the entity. All the vacancies that we have had, we always have them to be funded. All the funded positions, we need to make sure that we fill those positions that are vacant. We also have a number of training interventions that we have for our staff so that they become a multifaceted in approach. We have people that are really GIS people, but we are also training them to be able to do facilitative roles when we are meeting stakeholders out there. Then we have the issue of the audit report, where the output indicators for us to continue to maintain the unqualified audit opinion as expressed by the AG with no findings. And then we have issues of financial management reports, which assist us to look at whether we are spending our resources accordingly, and if not, then what kind of interventions we put in place. The next one is still under program one, is the issue of the strategic risk register, where we develop this register and implement the mitigation strategies that are required, and then produce those risk mitigation reports. And then the last one, if not mistaken, is the report on the implementation status of the audit recommendations. Now, program two is where the gist of the matter is. And for this coming financial year, we are going to be doing the analysis of municipal boundary redetermination proposals. Chair, what we are saying here is that this is the project that will be continuing for the next 2 to 3 years. For this financial year already, we have, during the ward delimitation process, received 44 requests for outer boundary determination. Either in other instances, they want a ward to be moved from one municipality to another. In other instances, they want what you have referred to, they want to revert back to their old municipality. And in other instances, they want a metro, and in other instances, they want a district. So we have, we are going to be categorizing that in terms of the category that we have put together. And then we want to develop a multi-criterion decision support tool. This tool is for us to be able to integrate all the information that we get when we are dealing with the applications for any boundary determination. And this tool will assist the board so that when they make a decision, they are making a decision aided by this multi-criteria decision support tool. The third one is the reports on the analysis of administrative and service areas in relation to municipal boundaries. We are going to be looking at all the municipalities, the 213, the locals, and analyze the administrative and service areas to see whether there is any other area that is supposed to be served by a municipality, but you find that it might be following in the other side of a municipality. Program three is our research function, which supports program two in that for all the cases that we are going to be looking at for outer boundary determinations, there is a certain number of reports that need to be produced by research, first to ensure that the kind of information and the kind of decision the board takes is informed by those reports. But specifically here, we are going to do to integrate spatial data products into a spatial knowledge hub. What we want is that any information spatially needs to be found in one hub. And then we have the norms and standards for municipal capacity. I've explained it earlier. For this year, the seven that we are having, the functions that we are having will be the last, because we want that to inform how the outer boundary determination will happen. So this will be the last of the norms and standards that we'll be doing. And then the research reports I've already referred to, and then we'll be updating the capacity assessment data that is currently available. And the reason why we have to update the capacity assessment data is that normally we do capacity assessment so that once the board is making a decision, we talked about a multi-faceted tool earlier. It must include all the information around capacity assessment so that when a decision is made, we are able to say indeed the reasons why we made this decision is 1, 2, and 3. The last program, Chair, is program 4, where we're talking about three outputs there. The first one is public awareness and education activities, and the second is stakeholder awareness and education activities, and then media coverage. I just want to make a comment here on the issue of public awareness and education, because most of the time, when we talk about the numbers of this public awareness and education activities, there is a correlation as to how are we going to be dealing with this when we know that there is a we are still under COVID-19 regulations. We have realized this particular objective last year when we started engaging with a number of municipalities virtually, and we find that in certain instances it does work. It does have a negative in that in certain areas where they do not have the luxury of a computer or a network, it's still a problem. So these are the few issues that we are going to be focusing on. In terms of our budget, the overview of our budget, you can just look at the green part of the slide. This is as per economic classification. Our budget, we have a total revenue for the 2021-22 of 71 million. And under the operating expenditure is the issues in terms of the economic classification. And the next slide is the same slide, but in terms of the budget expenditure per program. So you will see that almost the bigger chunk of our budget goes to administration, and the rest, which is the balance, will go to demarcations. We've got 18 million, and research and knowledge management 3 million, stakeholder management 6 million, and then we have a small capex a budget of 3 million. Now, a little bit just to comment on the broader budget cuts that were being done by our National Treasury last year. Initially, we were not spared of the budget cuts, but firstly, when we started with the financial year in April, our budget baseline was increased by 24 million. That 24 million, 18 of which went to cater for the job evaluation outcomes that the board had conducted, and we found a number of employees. In fact, almost 90% of employees were underpaid. And then 2.5 million was a once financial year allocation to public participation and awareness, to focus on the programs of awareness as we're dealing with the water delimitation process. And the balance was just a normal inflation increase. Now, this increase was initially offset by a reduction that has been done by top slicing the allocation by 4 million and 1.3 million on the special adjusted budget announced in June, and 3.6 million for the cost of employee adjustments. And that was in the previous financial year. And in the current financial year and the outer year, there was going to be a reduction of 4 million and 6 million, which took a total to around 14 million in the medium-term expenditure framework. But this decision was reversed by National Treasury after we made the several representations by the chair made several representations to the minister and treasury, and indeed they reversed the decision, so we still have our money. So, Chairperson, the challenges have already been articulated, and I'm not going to go there. And we just want to thank the committee for continuously engaging with us, and we still hope that after your opening remarks, Chairperson, where you were referring to the engagements that you have had with municipalities last year, we still believe that as the MDB, you may want to also engage with us in relation to these issues that are raised by particular municipalities. Our view is that, broadly speaking, when we redetermine municipalities, we are using these four broad criteria and not necessarily financial viability alone. But we do think that there are certain things that may need to happen governance-wise, institutional-wise in municipalities Because if you look at the night that you spent yesterday until today, it might have been a matter of institutional arrangement and governance arrangement, and not necessarily a question of this municipality was demarcated wrongly or rightly. But to conclude, Chair, we are also analyzing decisions that we make in terms of amalgamating. That is why even in this current financial year, we'll be looking at two areas where we did an amalgamation. One would be in Gauteng on the Rand West, and the other one would be in KZN on the Langa Libalele-Tubi. So we'll be comparing the before the amalgamation and the after amalgamation, and we have a number of indicators that we are looking at in terms. Some of them is financial issues, some is service delivery issues, and governance issues around your audit outcomes in those municipalities. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Ntate. So now I'm going to allow members for clarity seeking questions and input. Colleagues, the platform is yours. We have Honorable Tsheza, we have Honorable Mkhalipi. So we'll start with Honorable Tsheza. Honorable Tsheza.
No, thank you very much, Chair. As to against the light here, just bear with me, Chair. Yes, thank you very much, Chair. Mine is very, very brief, Chair. I just wanted the demarcation board to give us a synopsis of a historical background as to what are the root causes for the local government elections to follow the national and provincial elections after 2 years, and why the demarcation board failed to delimitate what's within a more synchronized cycle, because the cycle now is 5 years and then it's 2 years. I just wanted to, I am more curious about that particular response. The second one relates to program three, research spatial information and intelligence development. The board envisaged establishing itself as a national center of excellence in terms of spatial data and information, as well as intelligence and knowledge that contributes to the redress of apartheid spatial planning. However, the budget allocation to this program amounts to a mere 3.3 million compared to the 52 million allocated for the administrative functions of the organization. Can the board explain why the key program is the least funded compared to all others? And then, Chair, in terms of public, and the last one, Chair, in terms of public awareness and education activities, they have cited that there is a problem in terms of accessing accessing people with no network and devices and social media and stuff like that, which triggered a question. Because in terms of the IEC, when we grew up, we saw this SABC program on, I think it was acted by Matunjwa, actor Matunjwa, who was popularizing the elections since after 1994. And what public awareness and education activities relating to popularizing the work of the MDB together with the SABC, which is much more a public broadcaster that will then reach much more people even in the rural areas to to remove the stigmatization of the board, that it is in its delimitation, it hampers on some of the preferences of people in terms of delimitations basically how will this program be take its form? Is there any move towards that public awareness and education activities? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tsaza. Honorable Mkhalipi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks for the opening remarks from the Chairperson of the Board, of which when the presentation was done by the CEO, it talks to the opening remarks of the Chair. I just want to firstly to get more information in terms of the presentation when the CEO, Mr. Skidi, was also telling us about their committees. I'm hearing for the first time. I'm very interested to know the role of the committees and the details, just to have that information as a committee member, just to share some information in that regard. Well, Chair, I think both of them, the CEO and the Chair of the Board, as per your opening remarks as well, Chairperson, that this issue of amalgamation, some of the municipalities that we have engaged with here, they are suggesting that it does not help the situation at all. And I think both the Chair and the CEO also touch on that one. So I really want to get the position of the board now. What is the plan going forward? Because we can't have a situation whereby the board recommends that these two municipalities, they must be amalgamated because they have some challenges in terms of economy and so on and so on. But the situation is proved to be very severe. And I remember specifically here, Chair, you'll also concur with me. I think we're meeting with some of the municipalities in Mpumalanga, whereby people were saying, no, since we don't belong to this municipality in Mpumalanga, our ward, specifically our ward, you are experiencing some huge disparation now. There's no electricity. It's like we are in, and we are still under apartheid government. So there's no services that is coming to us. Even the new demarcation, which we have new municipality that is supposed to service us, they don't even come to us anymore, unlike before. So therefore, I'm really concerning, and then I really want to get from the board to Kuti. No, I think one of the reasons why you opt for amalgamation for all the municipalities that has been amalgamated is to improve service delivery, to make the lives of people to be better. Then it's also an evidence that in the last two financial years or so, the board has been expressing concerns as well about its lack of presence in the local origins. And that's what the Chair was talking about. And that is the concern that we raised here as well, to say that this board is very important, especially when we are saying that one of your mandates is to go and consult with the people to avoid situations that happened previously. The issue of Vuane is one of them. And in that area there in Gauteng, I can't remember, where the late MEC who was leading that protest and the president of COPE, who was the minister of safety and security by then. And that place was up in arms, people revolting. They didn't want to be put under that place. And you begin to ask yourself if those people were consulted or not. So therefore, this issue that the CFO and the chair spoke about to decentralize their offices or their work, it's very important, is obviously. So I'm not hearing the clear program as how to address that, because even before we have raised that concern in the committee to say, guys, but it can't be that if you want to go and consult with people of Eastern Cape, we have to go and rely on the very same municipality that people are complaining with. So there will be some challenges there as a board. You can't even move according to your program, because we are also relying on the resources of this municipality to go and consult with people. And they are going to tell you that, no, Tina, we do understand these people better than you. They are going to dictate terms. So therefore, I would like to, in connection with the budget that the CEO talks about, if your talks with the National Treasurer, I think it also was mentioned in your presentation that when they wanted to cut your budget, at least you persuaded the National Treasurer, but it's not even clear here if those talks have good results, and then how to address the specific questions of having offices at a local level in order to coordinate your work. You know, now we are in a situation whereby politically, we want to know how many wards according to new demarcation, and you are still waiting for the final report and so on from IEC and everyone. But people are still confused. I know that the CEO, I know that you spoke about it here, that no, it was also beyond your control. You couldn't go physically. I'm saying my point, even if there was no COVID, we're also having some concerns about your consultation processes. Like I say, you don't come to where people are because of your budget constraint. So again, now you are saying in your presentation, at least you have managed through this difficult situation, which is COVID. Although the CFO was also mentioning the fact that you can't be saying you are also 100% satisfied, because in rural areas, it's very difficult to tell a person there in Nquma, please go and participate on this platform. So it also going to exclude many people. You know, it's a challenge when there's no COVID and we're not expecting anyone to use these such platforms. It's not for everyone, because people of rural areas are always being sidelined. So I'm saying, how are we going to address that going forward? Yes, COVID is going to be with us for a long time, but it does not mean that we must not also have some options on how to be able to communicate straight with our people. The issue of stakeholders is a different case. At least most of the stakeholders are people who are resourceful. But I'm concerned particularly for the people, especially the poorest of the poor, who supposed to have a voice to also to participate in such programs of government. But it seems as if it's a long way to go. So I'm saying now, even we were engaging with you, I think a day or 2 days ago, and you also mentioned you were also on social media. I mean, that comment of yours, a chairperson of the board, saying that you are still going to go back to those people who are not happy about the new demarcation. So therefore, now, because we are here at the committee, we need to talk into details to say that if you have made that statement, and it's a very good statement to be made. I mean, it's leadership. You have to go and tell people, no, I'm taking out. You are not going to be part of this ward anymore. And then they protest and then they raise grievances. And it's very good as a leader to say that, no, let me come back to you to explain further. But now, tell me, I mean, are we going to achieve anything after we have decided or your recommendation has gone past to say that, no, this ward is not going to be under this VD. This VD is taken to this VD. So going back to them, what are we going to achieve? in terms of addressing their fears and their dissatisfaction. So let me just pause there for now, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mkalipi. Honorable Mpumza.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good evening. Chair, you will have to, I must apologize because the venue where I'm seated and joining your meeting does not allow me to
It's okay, Honorable Mpumza, we understand.
Thank you very much. Chair, thank you very much, Chair. And first and foremost, Chair, in welcoming the APP from the Demarcation Board, let's first commend the board for once more achieving a clean audit outcome. And posed also a challenge to say, the challenge now is how the board going forward would sustain this outcome so that it does not regress. Because achieving also brings in a challenge as to sustain that achievement. Chair, the demarcation process runs over a 5-year cycle. And involved in this also is the issue of capacity assessment on the powers and functions of municipalities, in particular within the two-tier system of local government. And this 5-year cycle had been challenging municipalities to arrive at stability and consolidation, arising from the fact that from time to time within 5 years, then powers and functions has to be assigned either to a local or to a district. And this thing would not stabilize local government. The board has made very important proposals in relation to the current Demarcation Act amendment, that the proposal now would have to run to us so that the board, instead of running the 5 years, it had that to run over a period of now 10 years. And this would ensure stability and would provide the board with sufficient time to conduct assessment and everything, so that all those informations are credible to inform the assignment of powers and functions at the 2-tier level. Now, this bill had been running over through the department. The bill process had been run by the department. What we want now to understand, at what stage now is this bill around its amendments? Where are we? Secondly, Chair, in the presentation, particularly around this question of public and stakeholder education awareness. Is this awareness solely limited to the demarcation board activities? Or is this awareness also going beyond towards mobilizing the public for meaningful participation in the demarcation process throughout its cycles, so that the process of demarcation is so enriched by a meaningful participation by communities that would end in minimizing a number of objections after the closure of the period. I heard the chair was indicating that now that they are through, they attended over their work to the IEC. But now they are still now seized with the fact that there are areas that they have to attend to where there are still areas of disputes. Now, they would be going now only to mediate, not to change, to mediate in persuading people to understand that the process now has been completed. If then communities are mobilized through such education awareness, and so that they understand fully their civic duty to participate, this would assist and enrich the process so that when it is going, it's not mechanical, it's an organic process. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Mpumza. Honorable Kunevas.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it's more a question of request for information from the department. There's research and reports done. If it's possible, will the department just send those research that they have done to us? And I've seen the new APP as well. There's two research reports they want to do.
My apologies, Honorable Kunevas. Honorable Mpumza, can you please mute your microphone? Honorable Mpumza? Honorable Mpumza, please mute your microphone. Honorable Kunevas, you can proceed. My apologies for that disturbance.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, no, the request is if we can receive those research reports, I would like to see the quality of that in and the information in it. I think it will also assist us as parliamentarians to also understand the work of the MDB better. So if it's possible, we can get those reports and research reports as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kunevas. I also have a question for the board. The Municipal Demarcation Board is often accused of consulting affected communities and is often accused of not consulting the affected municipalities or communities. And this has resulted to complaints, protests, and in some instances, court challenges. What lessons has the Municipal Demarcation Board learned from the cases of the previous years in relation to public participation and stakeholder engagement? And how did those lessons assist the board in ensuring that it operates efficient and effective on what is expected from them? And then the second one, what lesson can the board share with the committee on amalgamated municipalities in terms of financial viability, social cohesion, and functionality? Thank you. Now I'm going to allow Mr. Thabo Manyoni and the team to respond to the issues that have been raised by the colleagues. Ntate the Thabo?
Well, thank you, Chairperson, and members, particularly members who raised issues for clarification and questions. I would not go into almost all the questions raised. The CEO and other members will handle those. But Jenji, let me broadly look into issues that have been raised by Ubabu Honorable Mpumza. The issue of how are we going to sustain the achievement? Obviously, the main thing, Chairperson and members, is that when you destroy institutions and the structures that are set in for the institution obviously to decay, you first get rid of all those knowledgeable people in the institution. So in this regard, I would say we would try by all means to keep people who are knowledgeable in the institution so that they can carry on with the good work that they have been doing for the past few years. Kulentole has been a chairperson on the issue of encouraging the public to participate on MDB processes. And members, I'm not sure why, for instance, we fully knowing that the IEC is independent, but all political parties, all, they make sure that they encourage potential voters, their elected members, your provincial party liaison officers, and so on, to participate on matters of the IEC. And I'm trying to say, Chairperson, also here, political parties should not and they cannot be observers on matters that basically will be impacting on them and their constituencies. So every time when we make announcements that we will be having participations in certain areas and so forth, it will be appreciated, and I think it will also assist in enhancing democracy in the country. For political parties also, to encourage their members to participate in those processes, as we basically are doing all the time with the IEC processes. Because if we miss it here, we obviously are impacting negatively on the fairness of our elections, simply because people would have not known much about some of the processes that led to ultimately them going to the polls. And Chairperson, on the issue that you also raised, and I think it also tallies with, again, Honorable Member Ume Kalipi. Really, Chairperson, the issue of decentralization of having provincial offices for easy access, and of course, obviously, as part of, as I am stressing in this meeting, deepening democracy by having communities understanding exactly what the processes are and what is expected of them and what inputs they need to bring on board so that they can get the results that they want is quite important. So in this regard, we will appeal to the committee to assist us in sourcing the necessary resources so that we can then be able to have provincial footprint in terms of provincial offices. That is getting now quite clear. The issue on whether, after we have again gone back to the communities, when we already have sent and submitted our ward maps to the IEC, whether it is having any value and so forth. Yes, we make it clear every time we go to those communities that we would not change the decision, of course, because these are legislated processes. But the other thing is, if we want to have smooth elections, generally speaking, of course, there will be areas where there will always be hiccups and so on. But to have smooth elections, it is proper for the constituencies, the people of the country, of course, to understand how did we come to the conclusion that we came to. As long as our communities don't understand, they are not aware, we have not even gone to explain ourselves, I think we will be doing much disservice to communities. And hence, therefore, we have to go back to some of these communities. Of course, we know there are issues there. There will be some who just want you to always be appearing simply because of, as part of electioneering processes. In some cases, a person will just say, please come and explain. But you'll find that mostly it is for the person to try to send a message to communities that you see, I'm doing better. I'm able to call the demarcation board to come and explain to you and so. Those obviously are side issues, but the main thing is our constituencies, members of the public, they must at least be given an opportunity to understand how did we come to the conclusions that we came with. And I think that is quite important for us. I would then, Chairperson, if you allow the CEO and other members to be able to address some of the issues that have been raised by members. Thanks very much, my Chairperson.
Thank you, Abu Chikabo. The CEO and COO, you can then respond to other matters.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will invite the COO to deal with all the questions that have been asked by Honorable Cesar. I will attempt to touch on a little bit of the questions that have been raised by Honorable Mkalipi, Honorable Hurnewald, and then there is one question from Honorable Mpumza. I think I saw members of COCTA, the department. They may tell us that Kevin Naidoo will talk to the issue of the stage of the amendment bill. If I may start with your question, Honorable Chair, in terms of what lessons have we learned in previous years. Firstly, when the board had a conference in 2016, there are a number of lessons that have been articulated at that time. And we responded by saying you need a program that will respond to some of the issues that were raised. And one of them was the introduction of the program around public participation and stakeholder engagement. So it was coming from that particular conference. The other matter around regionalization, where we found that we need to have a footprint in quite a number of provinces first, was also an outcome of the lessons that we have learned from the past. The second part of your question, which I can link it to perhaps answering some of the issues raised by Honorable Mkalipi, is you correctly zooming into the factors of demarcation as outlined in Section 25 of the Demarcation Act, when you say what are the lessons that we have learned on issues of viability and of functionality. I said it is linking with what Honorable Mkalipi has been saying, because the issue of our criteria, if you look at those factors, they are around 12. But for us to be able to ground them into concrete activities, we then group them into four broad areas. One, which was the issues of spatial information. The second one being issues of financial and governance matters, and the third being socioeconomic activities, and the fourth one being service delivery. Now, you went straight to the issue of financial viability, which is one of the area that we have. Now, in the past, we didn't have a mechanism to really test whether where we have been, there is any improvement around some of these particular indicators. We are learning we did a project where we studied, I remember we studied Mangaung, and I can't remember the other municipality, whether it's called Naledi, the amalgamation, how How has it affected the issue of financial viability? And we then said, these are matters that when you talk about amalgamating, there are these things that Kevin Naidoo deals with in terms of the transitional mechanisms of looking at your HR related issues, your labor issues, your communication issues, your financial issues. But we then realized that the impact is more about the grading of these municipalities, because if you are having a municipality called Naledi merging with a Mangaung, you are going to be impacting on the cost of employee budget of Mangaung, because you then have to deal with issues of equalization before you even talk about issues of service delivery. So these are some of the things that we are learning. But quite recently, we end of this financial year, we can be able to share with you this particular information. We did a report, two reports, where we were analyzing the impact of the impact of amalgamation on service delivery. And what we did was that we looked at Mangaung and Polokwane, and some of the things that are coming out there, they are articulated in a form of in the form of each and every indicator. So we have been doing some of these things based on the lessons that we have learned. Honorable Kurevald, on the issue around the research report, we have submitted to after the committee secretary has requested us as part and parcel of responding to the input. I think it came through a document that comes from Parliament. We have submitted two reports to Sherin. We think she will be able to share with you. And the other ones that are coming now in this current financial year will be able to share with you. The question by Honorable Mkalipi around more information around the governance committees of the board. In the presentation, we are talking about those six committees. The committees are just for to allow the board to deal with its function effectively. Governance is self-explanatory. It looks at the issues of governance and ethics of the entity. It's a requirement, especially when you are dealing with issues of King IV. The Human Capital Committee is more our REMCO. In other entities and other boards, it's called REMCO. It deals with HR-related matters, but also looks at the remuneration of employees and the others. The Audit and Risk, this one is a committee that in all entities, you'll have audit and risk that looks at how we are doing in terms of our internal controls, our risk management, and whether we are responding to queries that are brought in by the Auditor General. The Ward Delimitation and Boundary Determination Committee, I said this was a committee in the past that we used to refer to as the Boundary Powers and Functions. We used to call it BPSC. This is the main committee that before a board sits and considers the Ward Delimitation of the Outer Boundary report, this is the committee that deals with that particular aspect. The research and knowledge management is self-explanatory. They do research to support the Ward Delimitation and Boundary Determination Committee. The finance one, like we are saying, is newly established to look at the issues that in the past were dealt with by audit and risk. So this is the committees that we have. Then you made a number of comments relating to what is the plan, because in the articulation of what we have said in terms of what the municipalities that we have been engaging, most of them saying the kind of situation that they find themselves in is really because of the cost of because of demarcation. The issue here, Honorable Mkhalipi, is that the demarcation board, when they demarcate, there are a number of triggers. I can just say with you three. One, the board can redetermine a boundary on its own initiative. After we have made the research and done the capacity assessment, this information will tell us that there is a problem in this particular area. Then you may need to amalgamate. But we don't just amalgamate. Then we look at those factors of amalgamation. Now, if it is the initiative of a board, it's easy for the board to explain itself. But then there is also an initiative of the minister and the MECs in terms of Section 22.2, where the minister, after consulting the MEC, can come to the board and say, I have looked at these two municipalities. They've got the following problems, and we want them to be amalgamated. Then the board must go and do its research around those particular municipalities and then be able to make a determination that these municipalities need to be amalgamated. Now, very important is if you look at that Section 24 that forms part of the criteria, you know, there are issues of the need to share and redistribute resources. Which normally in the past we'll talk about cross-subsidization. These matters are matters that we can look at, but we need to be able to say there are people on the other side of the equation like Naledi. These people, if you amalgamate them with the Mangaung, what kind of redistribution are you going to achieve? But before today, we also had this issue of the need for cohesive and integrated and unfragmented areas. Now, if we can say we have moved for the past 20 years, maybe this may not be required. It is a matter that the committee may suggest a different criteria in the bill that is there so that we are able to deal with these matters. But the other one that I wanted to comment on is more specifically the interdependence of people and communities and economies. So all these things are related. Let me allow the COO to take Honorable Cesar's question and maybe Honorable Mpumza. Or the last one from Honorable Mkhalipi was, I think the issue of the IEC, the chairperson answered it well. Is the issue of funding. You see, we continue to engage Treasury. The manner in which we have engaged Treasury to really reverse the budget cut and also to fund us for the job evaluation outcome. We didn't do the traditional route of writing through COCTA. We invited the people who are in the budget office who are responsible for our portfolio. We invited them to the board. We presented everything, because when you go to Treasury in a normal functional meeting, they call them functional meetings, you will find that they are competing needs. So much so that when they go to the Mincom board, the board is not sitting in the Mincom board. The ministers in the budget committee will just say, no, we are funding, these are the needs, the SABC needs this, SAA needs this, ESCOM needs this. And then you find that MDB has been forgotten because it is not really the time for redetermination. Elwood?
Thank you very much. Thanks to the chairperson. And thanks to honorable members. Yes, Honorable Cesar raised a question with regards to the synopsis of the historical background as to the why local elections happen 2 years after that. I think the only information that I could provide is that it's got to do with when this current dispensation of local government actually started after the promulgation of the relevant legislation. You would know that before the current system, which started in 2000, we had the transitional arrangements in 1996. And after the promulgation, obviously, of the Structures Act, Demarcation Act, Systems Act, and subsequent to that, the MFMA and all that. Then, after the Demarcation Act was proclaimed and the Structures Act, the board was appointed and commenced with the demarcation of the new municipalities, reconfigurations, and from the 843 to 200 and odd municipalities at that time. So the target was that elections for this new dispensation of local government was to be in 2000. And you will notice that I think the national and provincial elections were in 1998. So I don't think there's any specific reason except that when the new dispensation was supposed to start in 2000, obviously prior to that we had the national and provincial, and that kind of cycle tended to continue because constitutionally you can't go beyond you can't go beyond the proclaimed cycle of council. So when the national government elections happen, when the term finishes, there has to be an election. So the same for local government. So that term, those tended to always have been after every 2 years. And the board has always been aligned to that. So I would say that it's more on how constitutionally the electoral processes was designed. With regards to, there was one a question raised by Honorable Kweza again on why the key program, program three, especially, I think it's program two and three, the one on demarcation and the one on research, why they seem to be least funded in this regard. You will actually, program one of actually the biggest reason why it seems to be carrying almost 50% of the funds of the MTB is because that's where remuneration for all the employees actually is a resize. So that's why it's carrying much more. And the other ones that are there is more for the work, the actual work that they do. So that's why the budget is like that. But most importantly, the other thing that I want to mention is that over the years, the MTB has been, which I think is commendable, the MTB has been moving to a situation where some of the major programs are being run internally. We have in a way eliminated most of the work by consultants. You will note that at the beginning of the board, work was done mainly by consultancies, and we do most of the work ourselves internally, which means we have to capacitate ourselves internally. So you'd find that because of that, obviously the remuneration budget will be much higher than most of the things. Unlike in situations where you have to use a lot of consult, you would have found that, for example, the demarcation one is the one, it's where ward boundaries are done and also municipal boundaries are done. If most of the work was being done externally, you would find that we would have had a lot of funds channeled to paying consultancies and all that. But in the MGB, most of this work is done by employees themselves internally, such that we do not incur a lot of costs except for salaries. Hence, salaries in program one are making it about 50% of the budget of the MDB. Then, Honorable Kweza also asked about public awareness and education and why the IEC, I think the chairperson has dealt with that one. About why the IEC processes. I think what he was raising mainly was with regards to the fact that programs of the IEC are seen on TV. In other words, they are very intensive in terms of their public awareness and all that. I think the chairperson has dealt with that particular one in terms of how we think it can be improved. But the question was also, what is it that we are doing as the MTB to make sure that our programs are also, as the word that has been used is to get the communities to participate meaningfully. If you have checked and have seen in the last 2 years, as the CEO has indicated, after 2016, one of the programs that we came up with is relates to public participation and awareness and education. And with that, we were able to improve on our intensity with regards to public education. One of the things that we have done in the ward delimitation process, especially before we started with the process in 2018 to into the beginning of 2019, we went out to all provincial, to all municipalities effectively to do education and awareness on what delimitation is all about. Obviously, because of our limited budget, we were able to target people like community development workers, ward committees, and councillors at a local level. And the intention here, it was more like an improvisation. Our idea was that if you get those people who are playing a specific role in at local level in the communities to understand these processes, in one way or the other, they would assist in peddling the information about demarcation, about ward boundaries and all that, because we cannot necessarily have all the resources to get to every corner. The other thing that Honorable Teza asked was, what are we doing to popularize the MTB? One of the things that we have recently been intensely working on is to use local newspapers and radio stations. It's not the easiest process to do, but we have recently started using them, and we think that they'll play a pivotal role because they are very much at a local level, and in most instances they speak languages of the communities in those areas. So from time to time we ran interviews, and we were invited for interviews, and in the newspapers we ran some advertisements at local level, and we think it's an area that we can still grow in that regard. However, if we can make sure that we garner more resources, I think we can explore the use of radio stations. But the other thing that was very advantageous in this period, especially with ward delimitation, I think the committee will get the benefit of this when we do our annual report. We have used quite extensively the SABC radio stations. The advantage with those is that most of them use the languages that people speak in most areas. And they are not as much as possible to make sure that we popularize the information about the MDB in this regard. I think I've tried to fairly cover the concerns and questions raised by Honorable Press. Thank you.
Thank you, Ntate. Honorable Uneval.
Honorable Chair, I would have wanted Kevin to just share with the committee the status of where the bill is.
Okay, no, it's fine. You can share that. Then Honorable Kunevald will then speak after you.
Okay, now, thank you very much, Honorable Acting Chair. I see the chairperson has had a hand up for some time. I don't know if you want to take her first.
Thank you. Follow up.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Acting Chair. So Honorable Mpunza had requested a status as to the development of the Municipal Demarcation Bill. I think as part of the time frames that we've been working on, the bill was published for comments towards the end of June last year for public comments for a period of around 6 weeks. We had received quite a bit of comments. We had met with stakeholders on the 4th of December and on the 9th of December last year with quite a diverse set of stakeholders. SALGA included, the demarcation board included, represented by the COO as well as the CEO, deliberated on a clause by clause, process, factored all of the comments that we've received, and then taken it through to the state law advisor. So it's presently with the state law advisor. And then the CS part of it is presently also, was submitted to presidency for consideration. We've received feedback and we're at the process now of revising or attending to the comments that the presidency has made on it. Whereafter those compliance measures or requirements would be, attended to. And then we go to the various technical structures, being the JISCIT, the Governance, State Capacity and Institutional Development Working Session, to the DG's cluster of the same name, and then to the Cabinet Committee. So at that stage, when we do go to the Cabinet Committee of Ministers, we would ask for approval to introduce the bill into Parliament. So some of those processes are mostly out of our control. Bearing in mind also there's going to be the local government elections, probably going to be recess times, etc., that one would need to factor in. But that's where the bill is presently, Chairperson. Just to give you perhaps a flavor as to what lives in this version of the bill that we're developing. I think firstly, after much deliberation, the name or the title of the bill as it would be or as it was discussed and confirmed in the engagements that we've had. So presently it is called the Local Government Municipal Demarcation Act. After much deliberation in committee, in the engagements that we've had, we said, so let us align the title of the bill or the act to be together with what the Constitution says. So the Constitution says in section 1553B that there needs to be an independent authority that determines boundaries in the country. So having due regard to that, there was a discussion around it, and the title of the bill or act to be that was proposed was that it should be called the Independent Municipal Demarcation Authority Act when it is an act. And this is to also align in terms of new generation legislation. You would know that earlier last year, or during the course of last year, there was the Border Management Authority Act. There's also the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa Act. So the act that will now deal with demarcation issues is the name that I've just indicated to you. So it should also dispel some uncertainty around the present act. So when someone says that they work at the Municipal Demarcation Board, so are you a board member or are you an employee? So it doesn't come out clearly. But if someone has to say that I now work at the Municipal Demarcation Authority, the question could be, so are you a board member or are you an employee? So it dispels some of that uncertainty around that. There was a comment made around major redeterminations being done every 10 years. And as we've defined in the in the legislation now, a major redetermination would be anything that includes the movement of more than one ward. So if that is on the table, that would take place after every 10 years. The CEO had made mention of instances where you could get a request to perhaps amalgamate municipality X or with municipality Y. And we're saying that in the legislation, if such a request has to be made, that request should be made at least 3 years before the end of term of a local government. So unlike the position that we found ourselves in 2016, where we had less than 2 years to deal with transition-related matters, we're hoping that through this intervention, we'd be able to not find ourselves in a similar position. Perhaps lastly, the bill will now also provide for a whole chapter that deals with the alteration of provincial boundaries. You would know that presently there isn't any specific guidance or legislation that guides this. So we're saying that in the future, the demarcation board may make recommendations, or the demarcation authority will be in a position to make recommendations to Parliament around the alteration of provincial boundaries. And this could arise, from the normal course of work that the authority would do when it deals with technical boundary changes, etc. But perhaps the other thing that I think I should mention is also, and learning from the challenges that the board has faced around consultation and engagement, with the citizenry around demarcation issues. So what we've done now in the legislation is that we've provided for a much more intensive process of investigation of boundary proposals that emanate from private citizens, stakeholders, etc., where such investigation could then be taken to the board for further consideration. And if the board believes that it is something that needs further consultation, the board will then undertake a more intensive public consultation process. So probably to see it as a double barrel kind of engagement with communities around ward, around boundary, around municipal boundary changes. But what we've done also is that because the legislation presently is very thin around consultation around ward delimitation, we said that when it comes to the delimitation of wards as well, a similar process ought to be followed around public consultation engagement when it comes to boundary ward delimitation. Honourable Chair, I think I'd park that there, and hopefully, we would be bringing the bill to the committee after we follow the relevant processes that we must before introducing it into Parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ndate. Let me also acknowledge the presence of our Chair, whom I will also be giving over to her to proceed with the meeting. Chair, we've started with the presentation by Municipal Demarcation Board. And after their presentation, then members made inputs and they also asked clarity seeking questions. And now the MDB was responding to the questions and issues that have been raised by members. So we are now going to the second round where members have follow-ups, and we noted Honorable Groenewald, Honorable Mkhalipi, and Honorable Geza, and I also been notified that you have raised your hands. So I think I can just now give you a
a chance to speak and also allow you to proceed with the chairing of the meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson of the session. Yes, I came in when members were asking questions. Then there were things that I felt the colleagues didn't raise that one needs to also raise. And greetings to all the colleagues who are amongst us in the meeting. I hope my apology was registered. I was out down, I think the chairperson of the demarcation board and there was a kid who know. I was down at Amanang somewhere towards Zimbabwe doing constituency work. I had an issue that I wanted to raise. There's this issue about the district development model. And the demarcation board, though it's an independent board, it's within this FMLE COCT portfolio. Then, after all, the district development model, it cuts across government entities and everyone who's in the value chain. Then I wanted to understand what is the role of the Municipal Demarcation Board in respect of the district development model. And then how will the demarcation board then take advantage of this DDM and strengthen it in the course of implementing this 2021-22 annual performance plan? The other thing, as we read the annual performance plan, the board envisaged assisting role players to develop focus programs that build and strengthen municipal capacity. What we're interested on in this committee is whether the board can be more specific as to the details of these focused programs. And then when you read the APP, there is this issue that you also point out that the Constitutional Court has ruled in June 2020 that the Electoral Act was unconstitutional insofar as it barred independent individuals outside of a political party to compete as a candidate in the national and provincial elections. Although the implication of this act's reconfiguration on the board's work is not clear at this stage. Surely the organization will have to make a submission during the legislative review process. So the issue is here is whether does this consideration feature anywhere in the 2021-2022 annual performance plan, as the court is given government until June 2022, including us as parliament, before this ex-constitutionality invalidity becomes effective. So I would like to also hear what is the demarcation board view to that effect. Then you said I must take over. Then the end that is there is Honorable Groenewald will start, followed by Honorable Leza and Honorable Mkalipi on their follow-up questions as well. Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, I've asked a question in terms of the research reports. And there's one compliment I can give to our committee staff is that they're quite effective. And when I quickly asked them if they did receive that research report, they said they have not, although the chairperson said they did send it. If there's maybe, if you can just give us clarity in terms of what reports did he send, and then specifically the research documents, the research that they have done is what I'm looking for. Have they sent it? And if so, can they send it in again? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Groenewald. Honorable Teva.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. When you entered, I'm sure you've had my curiosity about the demarcation board having to provide us with the synopsis of historical backgrounds as to what are the root causes of the local government elections having to follow national and provincial elections after 2 years, and why the demarcation board has now failed, has not put up a program to delimitate what within the more synchronized sites. And then I went to research as to what are these historical backgrounds. And then what I found is that the reason for local government elections did not take place in 1994 was the Local Government Transition Act also established the demarcation board, which was supposed to delimit the areas of jurisdiction of transitional council and transitional metropolitan structures, delimit the number of seats and wards in a transitional local council. And this process took much more longer than deciding and negotiating provinces. Municipal local government elections took place in November 1995, a year and 9 months after the general elections. And it went on to the following year, June 1996, because of the demarcations disputes in the Western Cape and in KwaZulu-Natal. And now I'm asking that question based on that background, we are in the perpetual state of the elections because of that particular undertaking there that then says that the local government, municipal local government elections took place in November 1995, a year and 9 months after the place of took place in 1995, and 9 months after the general elections, and went on to the following year in June 1996 because of the demarcation disputes in Western Cape and in KwaZulu-Natal. And I'm merely asking that, and I was hoping that perhaps the COO will put these things across in terms of my confusion here, and in terms of my curiosity as to why are we here in this thing. It even, Chairperson, will say that the process of municipal demarcation from transitional structures took even longer post 1996 after the adoption of the constitution. By the time the national and provincial election took place in 1999, the process to transform local government post-apartheid was still underway. The white paper also resulted in another legislation, Local Government Municipal Structures Act, which established municipalities in terms of the types of a municipality, elections processes, and powers of municipalities. You can go on and on, Chairperson, in terms of what happened. To all that, it even Act of 1993, Act 209 of 1993, which mapped a road to successful local government election pre-interim transition. The provincial administrators were appointed in terms of provision of this act and granted powers to effectively manage and control the transition process from the pre-interim to interim phase. Also, provincial demarcation boards were established to demarcate non-racial boundaries of the first democratic municipalities established after the first local government election in 1994. This is set by Reddy in 19, 1996, written by Reed. The pre-interim phase began with the accent of the Local Government Transition Act 1993 of to the Act 2209 of 1993 and ended when the first democratic local government elections were held on the 5th of November 1995 in seven of the provinces in May 1996 in KwaZulu-Natal and in June 1996 in the Western Cape. This is Binza 2005, page 79. So I was hoping that we'll get that kind of synopsis as a committee and as a collective, so that we can just move from a position of knowledge base in terms of what happened and just Chairperson, why are we here, and so that we can see as to why is the demarcation board not capacitated enough in terms of financial resources to then go to our people and decentralize and through regionalization to have a provincial footprint in terms of the participation of our people in provincial offices. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you so much, Honorable Teza. Can I allow Honorable Mkalipi to follow suit as well?
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, firstly, I would like to get from the board when one can get a completely a new report in terms of the dedication.
Okay, my apologies, proceed.
Okay, I was saying that when can one expect a new map or a new demarcation report, sort of a map to understand what are the new words as we are heading to the local government elections. That is one. But I just want to make a follow-up on responses taken starting from the chairperson of the board. When one was raising concerns in terms of consultations, my take is that the board is unlike departments, like other departments such as Home Affairs, who are expected to have people every day in and out. The board, they do their work most of the time, doing their research, and when it's time for elections, when it's time for them just to go and do a consultation with people, that way they're supposed to go and consult with people. So therefore, I don't get the really, really reason why they're not visible. For me, it's like they enjoy to be elitist. And I know how the chair, I understand exactly why the chair of the board was responding the way he was responding. He's a politician at the end of the day, when he's saying that the committee must go and try to get resources for them in order for them to decentralize their work. Now we're saying that they have done everything in their powers to get resources in order for them to be visible. So now he's challenging us as the committee. But that is not the point. The point is that what is the plan? Because this thing of theirs who are not visible, if they want to go and consult with communities, they have to go and do it through the municipalities. And you are saying to them, it does not work. It does not work in terms of the consultation. Even then, the presentation, it's just that I don't have a presentation with me, but I think it's under program. They also mention in terms of consultation. They are saying that the input or the output, they're estimating that number there. I can't remember the figure is 8. And then you begin to understand why it's so complicated to understand. What type of consultation is this? What are they talking about? Or they're just complicating the presentation for us to be confused. That's why we're going to keep on asking this issue of consultation. The CEO, the chief executive officer, when he was responding to that fact as well, especially on the issue of amalgamation.
And then
that thing, Chair. I was listening to him with a keen interest when he was mentioning that, you know, they go and do their work, and after they've done their work, the minister come and said, you know, I wanted these two municipalities to be amalgamated because of 1, 2, 3 reasons, and they have to go back. So now it gives us a clue, which, oh, okay, the board go and do their work, and then the minister comes after they have done their work to say, no, I just need these two municipalities to become one. So therefore, I want to get a clarity. Do they also say no, in terms of the research that was conducted by us, is not advisable, minister, to do what you are suggesting? Or they just listen because the minister is a politician? When the politician said, no, go and do this, I want this. So I'm just thinking loud if what I'm thinking is true, Chair. So the last one in that, as a follow-up on what the chief executive officer was alluding to, that fact is that I just want to understand the, I don't know if they have information right now, but if I can make an example, I think I'm also building up on what Honorable Treza was asking, specifically saying that historically, the work of the board is to shift from what was the status quo during apartheid time and to have a sense of development as a progressive state. So now let me just make an example. I don't know if the CEO is going to be able to retrieve while I'm still talking in order for them to respond, but if they don't have a specific response now, I'll understand. But as people who have experience on what I'm going to ask now, they can also just respond in generalizing, because I want to understand this thing, Chairperson. Let me make an example of many words. For instance, the words that was dominated by Indians, colored, and white before 1994. So because of the Group Areas Act. So I know for a fact that, you know, after 1994, we said, no, we are one country. We need to be united. There's no, the special planning must be dealt with and so on, and create one South Africa. And therefore, you, the demarcation board by that time, together with other formations, started to say, no, this word was predominantly by Indians in Ward 52 in Phoenix. So therefore, now let us just put other areas which were not part and parcel of Phoenix to make the ward to be a multiracial ward, if I can put it in that way, Chairperson. So it means that there is no ward that is particular for a particular race. So now Ward 52 Amaoti has gone back to what was pre-1994. So I just wanted to get an understanding. How do the board arrive in the decision to say that, no, now I'm going to take out those particular VTs and then and leave the word as predominantly by the minority people in this particular word? Because for me, to me, Chairperson, it seems as if we are regressing, we are not progressing. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mkalipi. I should think those are the hands that I had at my disposal. Can I hand over back to the demarcation board to respond?
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks again, members. And thank you very much, Honorable Mkalipi, for the praise. Members, on the matter of ensuring that at least communication is easier, I want to stress the point that it is part of the plan to have those regional offices. As long as we don't have, we will still be faced with all these challenges that members are raising, partisan issues, issues of non-accessibility of public to the board, and so forth. So it is quite important that we do put this as part of the plan, that is having regional offices. I would like the CEO and also the deputy chair who is present here to deal with the issues that have been raised for clarification and deal with the questions that have been raised. CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with the Honorable Mukalipi, question of clarity. Just a correction, Honorable Mukalipi. When I talked about the minister in Section 22.2, I was responding to the issue of saying when the board redetermined boundaries, there are triggers. One trigger, we can do it on our own based on the capacity assessment report. I was not saying that when we have opened the process, then we also wait for the minister. If you look at Section 22, it indicates that the minister, because the demarcation board puts its own program of saying our program of redetermination will happen this way. And in that space is where Honorable Mukalipi can come with an application and say, I want this ward to move from this municipality to this municipality. That is your own application. When the application comes to us, it is now becoming the property of the board. We either agree with you or we disagree with you. If we don't have more information, we go and do research about your own application. The very same thing happens with the minister, but the minister is the one that can come after if she so wishes, not that it is an open matter. It is allowed in terms of the Act to say the minister, after considering what she might have considered, I can take for example the 2015 Section 22.2, when the minister of culture approached the board had already concluded its process. And in the approach, the minister said, in terms of my back to basics program, I have identified this areas that I think should be amalgamated into one. And the areas that he had identified were affecting close to 90 municipalities. But the MDB didn't do all of those. They indicated that we can do the following, and they looked at those and only amalgamated a few out of those. So I was just saying, sometimes it's an initiative of the minister as a trigger. The other trigger is the initiative of the board itself. The other trigger might be any other individual that when we open our process, can bring in an application. Like right now, when we open the process after the 2021 local government election, anybody can come with that particular application. But already, like I said, we have 44 that we have received during the ward delimitation process. Now, the last matter where you are referring to a ward, like we are going back to where you find a ward that is only composed of one particular community. The ward might be very difficult for you because if you look at the criteria for us to determine a ward, You cannot have a ward where you have one community that is here and another community that is passing another ward, and then you say you're putting a ward like that. You can have a municipality like that. The reason is that currently, when you have a settlement, that settlement is in a space. And for us to determine the ward in that space, it depends on the average number of registered voters for that municipality. And you might find that one community, whether it's the Indian community, is constituting that number of registered voters that are allowed in that particular municipality. So you may not say, because I have this word here, and it doesn't have some black people, I must move from here. You made an example of Phoenix. I don't really know where Phoenix is. But you may not move from Phoenix to another area, and you are looking for a word where you will find black people. So it doesn't work like that, because then you will be creating what we have been saying is a discontinuity, because you need to have a sort of a link, and the communities must be one. So the only area where you can be able to achieve the kind of integration that you're talking about is when you are dealing with a broader municipal area. Then you asking the question, what is the plan? Because we are talking about all these particular things, but what is it that we have as a plan as the MDP? Look, the plan for us, let me start by saying we have identified all these particular challenges, one of which is the budget. And we said in terms of our plan, we wanted to regionalize so that we are able to increase our footprint. But we have a problem of a budget, therefore we cannot regionalize. Now, what is it that we should be doing in order to increase our footprint? One is for us to increase our footprint through the media platforms. That is why in our strategic plan, we do have the media platform. The other is for us to engage our stakeholders through the current available virtual platform. But we are also identifying that those video platforms or virtual platforms have got limitations in that there are other people who do not have these particular gadgets and who are in the deep rural area. The last one that you raised is around the maps of the world. We have got two places where you can find the maps. First is in our website. We have categorized them. We have put them there as we have even categorized them as batch one municipalities and batch two municipalities. The second area is the Provincial Gazette, because all the wards, what we have done is to put the, in each ward you will find a map, and you will also find what constituted that map in terms of what VD. So it will tell you the VD and the number of registered voters in that VD. And then we show you the actual ward in terms of a map. The other area is that we have an app. You can be standing anywhere with that particular app. Once you go into that app, if you don't know the ward that you are standing in, it will tell you that you are standing in a Tekwini ward 25, or if you are in Kwamhlaba Uyalingana ward 12, it will tell you that. And if you want to search for a ward in that particular area, it will also give you that. Honorable Teza was talking within the context of the history of local government. I thought the question was more around synchronizing. How can we be able to synchronize if, for instance, the issue of the single election is muted and it becomes a law, how will we synchronize? But I guess when he talked about the history, he was expecting that we should have spoken about the history. But in terms of the cycle of local government, how it is different from national government, my view is that it's more in the budget cycle, because if the municipality's budget cycle starting in July and government starting now, there is always that lag, and there has always been that lag. The issue of Western Cape and KZN then was the issue of transitional measures in those areas, because there were still things that were lagging behind in terms of the negotiation. Honorable Chairperson, you asking the role of the board in relation to the DDM. Maybe I'll leave that for last and perhaps get some few tips from the chair and the deputy chairperson. But let me deal with the issue around the Concord ruling and the implication which you are not seeing in the APP for 2021-2022. Chairperson, we have not really sit down as the board and say we are not going to do anything. Immediately when the pronouncement was made, we started the brainstorming within the organization with the chair and the, some members. We came up with a discussion document that was meant for the board, and it was at the initiative of the chairperson. Firstly, we said, let's talk about the feasibility of a single election and what kind of implication it will have to the MDB. And then we mapped some particular processes that will be relating to, say, what will be the implication if there is a single election. That was the first thing that we were mapping. The second issue that we have been discussing was that if the new act comes in and talks about constituency-based elections in national and provincial sphere, what is it that as the MDB we can do? Firstly, we then said, let's look at the current reports that are available. We looked at the Fancil Slabbet report in terms of the number of constituencies that the report proposed, the 69. And then we looked at the current architecture of the 52 spaces that are within the issue of the district development model. And we said, if we have all this, and we have around 400 members that should be going into the national parliament and 30 to 80 in the provincial government, if a constituency is called the city of Joburg as part of the 52 spaces, how will the representation be determined? Then we started looking at all those particular things. They are not in the APP, but we are discussing them because beside the APP, we do have our broader operational plan that also has this particular matters. We didn't put it there because we were saying in the absence of a clarity as to whether the act, when it is finalized, it will be able to assist us in this particular direction. What is it that we can do? We are also conversant of the discussions that happened on the 16th of March, when there were quite a number of these presentations from the IEC, from ASA, from a and from Home Affairs and the committee that is trying to look at this particular matter. And we have looked at what is it that they are raising. And we were saying at the current moment, it is not yet clear whether it will be the provincial and the national sphere, how the constituencies will be arranged. The question by Honorable Groenewald, I will check Honorable Groenewald. I know that we have sent this report through. What I've learned is that it might not have been to the committee, but as part of responding to the ENE, but we will be able to send it to the secretary of the committee. If not tomorrow, by Friday, she will have it, and then she will distribute it to all the colleagues. I don't know, Aluwani and the deputy chair, whether you want to talk to our role in the district development model and how we are structuring ourselves within that context.
I don't know if the chair would want to start, but maybe she will come after me. Yes, chairperson, the question is it's more on what our role is with regards to the district development model, but also you asked a question as to how, as the MDB, we're taking advantage of the DDM to advance our own programs, especially with regards to demarcations. What I can indicate is that as one of the lessons that we have documented as part of the outcomes of the current ward delimitation process, we have noted, especially the thread that the committee is concerned with, especially with regards to public awareness, public participation, knowledge about the demarcation board, and people getting meaningfully involved in our processes, but also most importantly, because our process has got implications on the, amongst others, the functionality of the municipalities that we come up with at the end. Well, that lesson, one of the things that we've decided to do is, besides using the context of the
international...
Oh, yes, yes.
I'm being asked, why is your video not on?
I think it's on now. Yes, it
is. Yes.
Yes, thank you very much. My apologies, I forgot earlier. Yes, I was saying we have noted that in the context also of us lacking or having limited resources, one of the advantages of us using the district development model within the context of intergovernmental relations is that we can leverage that process to an extent that we want to start exploring the idea of the MDB becoming participants in the district development model almost on a full-time basis, to an extent that when we deal with issues of municipal boundary determination, where, for example, as a way of an example, if we've got a proposal that deals with Amatole as a district, it doesn't come by chance to the municipalities involved in that particular district. So the MDB should be part and parcel of the processes and systems of the district development model through participation on a full-time basis, so that we can also input our processes for feedback from all the people who are involved in this process, to an extent that even the decisions of the board ultimately are fed almost on a proactive basis, instead of when the board publishes and notices and asks for objections or submissions. So it will be more of a proactive process. That's what we're looking at. And also with regards to ward delimitations as well. If we are part and parcel of this process, we will be involved, and all the stakeholders that are part of the district development model, because in the Municipal Demarcation Act, the factors of the, which we consider, most of them requires a lot of information, either from the municipalities, either from government departments. The one that comes to mind is that we have to consider all the provincial development plans for the different areas. And we know that provincial departments like the Department of Transport, if they've got plans for a particular district, we don't want to be the ones who go and redemarcate that particular district and move a municipality out of the district and jeopardize the plans that are already in place. So we want to be proactively involved in the affairs and activities of within the context of district development model. So that's how we want to leverage and use the system to the advantage of the MDB, and make sure that it also assists in the effective implementation of our programs. The same with regards to public awareness and education. If we plug them into that particular system as well, we know that all the participants who are coming to this melting pot of a district development model will also have their own consultation process, awareness processes, to an extent that we can leverage some of their activities in that regard and drive messages about the municipal demarcation process. Yeah, that's my input.
Okay, thank you, COO. Chairperson.
Yeah, Chairperson, there is
the question that was left for you, or is it the deputy chairperson? The deputy chairperson, I see a microphone is on.
Yes.
Thank you,
deputy chairperson.
Thank you, chairperson. Greetings to the members. Chair, I think that they've answered all of the questions. And the one that perhaps I wanted to basically emphasize is the understanding that Honorable Mkhalipi was trying to raise on visibility or lack of is that we as the board must come up with a plan, you know, of how we envisage to decentralize, perhaps like how we would have constituency offices, but at a provincial level. Currently, we as a board operate at head office, that is the Pretoria office. There is no provincial presence per se. Board members that are there at a provincial level are not there on a full-time basis. You need the presence of officials that would attend to matters, you know, at a local level. You'll only see our visibility or our presence during the delimitation of wards or, you know, the boundary determinations. And this has come up, you know, during our interactions with the communities. They do not see us. Why are we not visible, which is what the honorable member is raising, and hence our proposal to decentralize. We would want as much as possible, however, we are hamstrung in terms of resources, but I understand, Chair, that we might have to present a plan to the committee as to how we envisage this provincial presence to be. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson of the Municipal Demarcation Board.
Chairperson, no thanks. Unless there is something that members feel that it has been left over, I think members have attempted to answer all the issues that were raised, my chairperson.
My question on the district development model, I thought Mr. Gidi said he was reserving it for you.
Chairperson, if I heard him well, he was referring to the COO and also the deputy chair.
Okay.
COO. COO. That is good.
Yes, Chairperson.
Can you respond there, please?
The question was responded to by Arwani in terms of all the plans that we're thinking about in terms of leveraging the DDM.
There's a hand from Honorable Kornevats. Honorable Kornevats.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Somebody with the name of Tavo, can you mute your microphone? There's a person called Tavo here. I don't know who's Tavo. Can I plead with this person to mute his or her microphone? Over to you, Honorable Kornevats.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, and I may pronounce it wrongly, but if I'm...
Honorable Kornevats.
Chairperson, can you hear me? Am I audible, Chair?
Yes, I can hear you. You can. You are.
Thank you, Chair. My internet is unstable, so let me be quick. In terms of the reports and the research we want, I want the person to commit to the fact that he will send the research documents that has been done. If he can commit to that and not the general, just to see if he can follow up, but I want that specifically, if he can commit to that as well. Please, Chair.
Okay. That's the only hand that I have thus far. Can we respond to the issues as raised by Honorable Honeywell?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, we'll definitely send the documents as per the request. I must also indicate, Chairperson, that some of the documents are also work in progress. For instance, tomorrow, the board will be workshopping itself on one of the documents that we are working on the concept, on trying to address the issue that we raised sometime in the meeting, Chairperson, about the mega cities, mainly specifically on the city of Joburg, that its space is not increasing, but the population is always increasing. And in terms of us, when we do what delimitations, we will be faced with a situation where you'll have a larger concentration of population that makes a ward, even to an extent of an area that is only probably having two or three streets. So the issue is, what is it that we are doing about that? And we are working on those type of issues, like I'm indicating tomorrow also, will be workshop. But nonetheless, those documents will be provided as per the demand and the request. Thanks, Chairperson.
Okay.
Chairperson, we
thank you, Chairperson.
May I?
Chairperson, okay.
Yes, Chairperson. Before the end of this week, we will have provided the necessary documents to the honorable member or the committee itself.
I think that suffices. Thank you so much. You must raise your hand, Deputy Chairperson. Don't call the Chairperson. Your hand is not up.
My apologies.
Okay, proceed.
No, there was also a request. The Chairperson of the Board committed to issue the research reports before the end of the week. There was also a request for the new map by Honorable Khalifi. I think that's another commitment that we can make for these maps to be made available. Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
So is everyone sorted now?
Yes, Chair.
No more follow-up questions?
No, Chair. We are sorted now. But I want
I just wanted to check, Chairperson, especially with regard to maps. I see that the Deputy Chairperson said we can provide. If your email address are bigger, because one a particular voting district, if your system is not having enough space, those documents cannot go through. That's why I was saying in our website, you just go to ward delimitation and then you click the 2020, then you can be able to get those maps there. But if we do have enough space, we'll request the secretary of the committee to just send us the emails of all the members, and then we can try to email all of them.
Okay. That's fair enough. Microphone is on. Yes. You want to say
yes,
something?
Chair. I just wanted to say to the deputy chair of...
Honorable,
yes, chair, do you hear me? Chair?
Yes. Yeah. I can hear you.
I wanted to say to the deputy chair of the board, Mamumbali, me and Owagi Tiwena, if Chairperson of the board is bullying you, she must come and report him to me because me and Esther is one thing.
I hope the chairperson won't respond to this. You are being provoked, chairperson.
Oh, no, chairperson. Everybody knows that I'm a gentleman.
In the absence of any other questions, follow-up questions, that brings us to the end of this meeting. Unless there's somebody who's opposing that, we mustn't adjourn this meeting.
Agreed,
Good night, Chair.
Yeah, you're covering up earlier this morning, last night. It's okay. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Chair.
Good night.
We're meeting
thank
tomorrow.
Thank you, Chair.
Good night.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, everyone.
Good night, Reverend. See you tomorrow.
Yes, yes, Chair.
Good night, Chair. Brian Adam. Good night, Mam Kalipi, Honorable Kalipi. Good night, Brian. Good night, Chair of the Board, Thabo Manyoni.
Good night, and thanks for the compliment.
Sharp deficit.
Hello.